another episode of NFL Draft Preview. Ethan Greenberg, Dane Brugler. The draft is creeping up day by day around the corner. So I want to hit the reset button a little bit. And the first thing that I think we should jump immediately right out of the gate is risers and fallers, because we've gone so much. We've talked about from the combine to now. There's been pro days. There's been medical clearance, non-medical clearance across the board. This is part of the process. As we record this right now, a couple weeks out, but still very close, in your mind, who have been the biggest risers and or fallers of the 2023 pre-draft process?
Yeah, you know, it's always tough when you talk about risers, fallers, because I don't know how much guys are really rising and falling up draft boards, but, you know, guys that those of us on the outside have been talking about, there are teams that like them more. And one of those guys could be Hendon Hooker from Tennessee, who the quarterback widely believed to be the fifth quarterback drafted, now being talked about as potential top 25 pick in this draft. Coming off the ACL, he's already 25 years old, coming from a non-traditional offense in terms of making whole field reads and, just doing a lot of things you're asked to do at the NFL level. I can understand why you'd come to the conclusion that Hendon Hooker is a future NFL starter. Very intelligent guy. The toughness is outstanding. Good size. He's 6'3", almost 220 pounds. He's a good athlete, has a good arm. But to take that risk in the first round, that's an awfully big risk. And so it'll be interesting where exactly Hendon Hooker ends up, because we know quarterbacks, they're a little bit different than every other position, right? You know, if you can get that fifth-year option, a lot of teams are going to jump at that, especially with a guy like Hendon Hooker, who is going to miss probably the first half of the year as he works his way back from his ACL injury. So you want to get that fifth-year option, just one more year to have him in the building. So you better be convinced that Hendon Hooker is going to come in 2024 and compete for starting reps immediately. So it's Hendon Hooker is a complicated prospect in this draft, but for teams that are looking forward and feel that comfortable about him, it wouldn't be a surprise if he ended up going in the first round.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how all of the quarterbacks come off the board. I mean, I think that's where most of the storylines lie most years, but specifically this year, considering the amount of talent at the top of the draft and the quarterback needy teams that are sitting at the top of the draft. But for the Jets, not the case. They own the 13th overall selection right now. I would say almost every single mock draft, aside from one wanting to like change it up a bit, have the Jets selecting an offensive tackle, which yeah. is the direction that I kind of want to hit the reset button today, because, again, you had your list. Has it changed at all since the first time you drafted your list, whenever that was? Maybe it was November, maybe it was January. What was your like initial list, and where is it now?
I think with these tackles, there hasn't been a ton of movement, but I think I felt better about where some of them stack up. Paris Johnson's always been one. Broderick Jones has always been two. Feel better and better about Darnell Wright there at number three. And then you get to the next tier of guys, which is your Anton Harrison from Oklahoma, your Matthew Bergeron, Syracuse, DeJuan Jones, Ohio State. DeJuan Jones might be the one where I was actually higher on him during the year and then kind of cooled off now that we got to the draft process. You know, we only saw one day of him at the Senior Bowl before he had to bow out. Only did the 40-yard dash at the combine, didn't do any other drills, and then decided not to work out his pro day. So some question marks there that we didn't get answered. And I know it's a frustration with a lot of teams with DeJuan Jones. And then some of the other guys that maybe are outside those top two tiers that I think really established themselves as, hey, we're somewhere in that third, fourth round range, whether it's Tyler Steen from Alabama, Nick Saldiveri from Old Dominion. These are guys that NFL teams look at and say they're future starters. And in order to get those guys, we probably have to take them on day two.
So for Paris Johnson, I feel like maybe this is just my own perspective. I don't feel like I know as much about his game. Right? Like people say, oh, Broderick Jones, freak athlete, Darnell Wright, left side, right side, big guy, light feet, dancing bear. What is the deal with Paris Johnson? Like, again, I know I said this about Michael Mayer in last episode, but it feels like, is he just like rock solid? right? He's like battle tested Ohio State, 13 at right guard, 13 at left tackle, which is his more natural position, to use your words. So, like, what's the problem here? Like, what's the negative, and why do some mock drafts have Broderick Jones ahead of Paris Johnson?
You're betting on the traits. Broderick Jones moves so well for his size, and so does Paris Johnson. I think with Paris, he tends to drift at times, especially at the top of the rush, where he'll get his weight just a little bit outside of where it should be, and that will create some inconsistencies with his hands, with his striking points. But that a lot of that stuff is coachable and stuff you can work at. He's a fluid big man, and that's what you want from a tackle. A humongous wingspan, over 36-inch arms. Wish we could have seen him work out as well, do some of the testing. He did the broad jump, and that was it. Decided not to do any other testing, rest of the process. And he's one of those guys I think knew he didn't have to. You know, I'm going to be a first-round tackle. I don't need to run the 40-yard dash if I don't want to. And so, but I do think he has athleticism to his game. And there's something to be said about how often he really tested, at Ohio State playing that left tackle spot. There were a few times on the Georgia tape, the final game of the year, where you could tell he was facing the best competition he had seen all year. Where guys were giving him a little bit of trouble, and he had to, there were times where he got beat by some of Georgia's, really good up and coming pass rushers. So it's a case of a player that's good, but to put him in the top 10 as a blue chip type of prospect, not quite ready to do that.
So would you say that the ceiling for Broderick Jones is higher, considering he hasn't played as much?
Played the fewest amount of snaps among any of these FBS tackles in this draft. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he moves so well with those feet, and he has the body control where he can recover very easily. So I think that is fair to say he has the higher ceiling, and that's why some teams have Broderick Jones as OT1 on their draft boards. And what thinking about, because only really just a one-year starter. He played some left tackle last year in 2021, but really didn't become the full-time left tackle until this year. And you can just thinking about where he's going to be 2 years from now can get you really excited about his future. So can understand why teams are going to bet on the ceiling with Broderick Jones.
Another guy we really haven't talked about, I feel like, is Darnell Wright. And it's interesting to me, Brian Baldinger did a breakdown for our TV show, and he was showing tape from Darnell Wright against Trayvon Walker and Will Anderson. And one, Wright was at left tackle against Walker. Then he was at right tackle against Will Anderson. So there's versatility in the two clips he showed. He handled his own well. So why is he a first, second round grade to you, and compared to maybe being up there with guys like Broderick Jones and Paris Johnson?
Well, and some teams do have him in that mix. For me, I would push back a little bit on the versatility. His tape last year at left tackle was not great. It was below average, I would say, as a whole. And that's why coming into the year, he was barely looked at as a prospect. He was viewed as a late round or PFA by almost every team that I talked to coming into the year. And this is a former five-star guy, highly recruited. He did not click at left tackle. It just didn't happen last year for him. This year, moves over to right tackle, and everything clicked. He settled in, and from day one, had an outstanding year start to finish. And he put himself in that first-round discussion, no doubt. But it does create questions. Is he just a natural right tackle, and moving him to left tackle will be a little troublesome? We've talked about this kind of thing before, right? With Tristan Wirfs coming out of Iowa, this was a hot debate. Tristan Wirfs, I thought, was more of a natural. He could play left tackle, could play right tackle, did both his final year at Iowa, and I thought he did it at a high level. With Darnell Wright, we have below average tape at left tackle and then above average tape at right tackle. And I think it'd be really hard to project Darnell Wright as having true either tackle versatility when that's not quite what the tape says. So, I think that's part of the reason why he's more of a back half of round one guy as opposed to a top 10 player.
It's going to be interesting because I think that's a great comparison in terms of abilities and whatnot, because Tristan Wirfs got drafted. He's been playing right tackle for the Bucs ever since, where a couple picks earlier with Jedrick Wills, who had played right tackle for Alabama, now is playing left tackle for the Cleveland Browns. So, and there was no, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, there was no left tackle tape on Jedrick Wills, right? It was all right tackle the whole time.
That's it. It's 100% right. And that's and that's where the O-line workouts, when, you know, teams will send their O-line coach to go work out a player, you know, you work them out in these different stances. And that's where this is, this part of the year, the calendar, that on March, early April, that's what teams are focused on, is trying to figure out those nitty-gritty details about a player. And so who knows, maybe, you know, after a team worked out Darnell Wright, they became a little more optimistic that he can move to left tackle. But you watch that 2021 tape, and it does definitely gives you a little bit of pause.
Okay, so Darnell Wright, is this class compared at all in your mind, or similar to the class we were just talking about in 2020 when it was Andrew Thomas, Jedrick Wills, Mekhi Becton, Tristan Wirfs? I feel like there's a lot of good tackle prospects, but it feels like it is kind of similar. But maybe that's just like a lazy take.
No, I mean, I think that that class I thought was maybe a little bit higher, just because you, I thought all four of those guys, you could make a case belong to the top 10. Jedrick Wills, he was my top tackle that year. I sold on him. Mekhi Becton, all the ability he had. Tristan Wirfs was my second tackle that year, and he ended up being the fourth of the group. And you could make the argument he's been the best of the group. I think that class was a little more top heavy than this group, which is good. It's a solid first round. If you need a tackle in the first round, I think you feel pretty good about the options that are going to be available for you, but not quite the top heaviness of that class.
So is there a scenario in your mind where the Jets don't go offensive tackle in the first round? Like, I feel like, not to speak for you or any of the draft experts, it's like, the Jets taking a left tackle, or not a left tackle, excuse me, taking a tackle. They have a left tackle in Dwayne Brown. They have Mekhi Becton, who hasn't played right tackle in a regular season game because he was the Jets' left tackle. So, but both of those guys on the final year of their respective contracts. Dwayne Brown going to be 38 years old by the time the season starts. Mekhi Becton's taken 48 snaps over the past two seasons, hasn't finished a game in the regular season because he got hurt in week one in 2022, he got hurt in training camp. And if you follow Mekhi Becton on social media, you'll see that he looks like he is in phenomenal shape. He looks like he's in a great headspace. And so the Jets, if they lined up tomorrow fully healthy, could have Dwayne Brown and Mekhi Becton as their tackles. Now, if they add one of these guys because they're betting on the future, I think that's the direction a lot of people think the Jets are going to go. If they don't go this direction on draft night, what or who was on the board that would cause them to go in a different direction in your eyes?
Well, let's talk it out. I don't think that there's a center that I would feel comfortable taking at 13. So it's cross center off the list. We probably think they're not going to take a guard with who they have on the roster and how, you know, their guard situation setting up. I think tight end's probably, you know, it's too rich to take a tight end at that point. Could they take, you know, with, running back there, I think they're set. Quarterback there, you feel like they're going to be in a good spot. Wide receiver, is that something like they feel like they need to add another, another talent to the mix? Do they like one of these wide receivers enough to take them there? Like a Jackson Smith and Jigba, you plug him in, to the slot, reunite him with Garrett Wilson. Like, is that something that might tempt them? On offense, that's the one position where you could squint and say, yeah, maybe, you know, like I could see why you'd want to do that. Make your offense even more explosive. Okay, let's help our quarterback as much as possible. On defense, you can never have too many defensive linemen. If they have a high grade on whether it's a Nolan Smith or a Lucas Van Ness, whoever it may be, if they have a high grade on one of those players and he falls to the 13th pick, you can never rule that out. We think they're probably not going to go linebacker there. And secondary, we feel like they feel pretty good. Brian Branch is one of my favorite players in the draft. Would you take him at 13? Probably not. I mean, I feel like not many places have him as a top 20 player on their boards. I know I'm one of the few. I know the 4.58 40, the 190 pounds, that scared off a lot of people. All I know is his tape is phenomenal, and I'm going to trust that tape all day long. But a lot of teams and an analyst, they don't see him as a top 20 value. So, I mean, now that we're talking it out, we come down to what? Maybe a defensive lineman, maybe Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I mean, not many other obvious spots where this Jets team could go.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And with the Jets and receiver, the Jets, well documented, were scheduled to visit with Odell Beckham. And then the night before, he was supposed to come to One Jets Drive and go on a tour and visit and everything. He signs with the Baltimore Ravens. So if you're reading the tea leaves, seems like the Jets were interested in a player like Odell Beckham Jr., obviously is a very talented receiver. Now, in the draft, I don't know if there is a good comparison or someone that you think could be as impactful as, not I'm saying as Odell, I'm just saying from the jump. And the Jets struck gold last year with Garrett Wilson. To your point, like, is it, if Jaxon Smith-Njigba is on the board, and if you're in charge of the Jets, Dane, you have your option of JSN or, I don't know, let's say Paris Johnson's gone already. So you have your option of JSN or Broderick Jones. And with the way this 2023 Jets team is shaping up, which direction do you go?
I invest in the tackle and what that means for I love any optimism when it comes to Mekhi Becton, when it comes to Dwayne Brown, but the likelihood of them both starting 17 games just doesn't seem very high based off of their histories. And you hope they do. That'd be awesome if they do. But, you know, you got to play the odds, and chances are they probably won't. And so not only are you thinking about next year, we are thinking about this season as well, giving yourself tackle depth. And a guy like Broderick Jones who can be the future, but also add depth right now from day one, that's awfully appealing. But you know what? To add a guy like Jaxon Smith-Njigba, because I think you're right. Your point is a good one about immediate contributions. That's if you're going to draft a receiver there at 13, this is a guy that needs to come in from day one and make an impact. And I think that's why I mentioned Jaxon Smith-Njigba over the rest of these receivers. Because he is ready. He is NFL ready from day one. His ability to find space, work the middle of the field is tremendous. He'd be the type of, it doesn't matter who's at quarterback. He's the type of receiver that can get open and, that defenses have to worry about. So you spread out a defense with Garrett Wilson and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, just like they did at Ohio State 2 years ago. I mean, that'd be a lot of fun. It'd be really appealing. But I think I'd have to stick with the offensive line and investing in, the guys blocking for my quarterback.
And then defensively, in the similar vein, the Jets love defensive linemen. They love offensive mm-hmm. linemen. So either one of those picks would make sense. In your mind, like, tackle and defensive end, two very valuable positions. Similar, like, let's take a look at the Jets landscape right now. From a pass rusher perspective, you're looking at Carl Lawson, John Franklin Myers in your base, JFM. By the way, if there were JSN and JFM on the same team, that would give people, including me, fits. Similar to Michael Carter, similar to Elijah Vera Tucker and Elijah Moore when he was here, and similar mm-hmm. to Bryce and Breece Hall. So
yeah, well, it's a shame they didn't sign Paris Campbell and could have Paris Johnson and Paris Campbell. And I mean, no matter who they draft, I'm sure we could find some type of connection.
Yeah, that's a great point. Regardless, Jets defensive ends. Carl Lawson enters the final year of his contract. Mm-hmm. Jermaine Johnson had a promising rookie season, so he's back in the mix. Michael Clemens as well. So maybe, and Bryce Huff as well. So maybe the Jets want to add a defensive end. Because it's a premium position, you know the coaching staff values the position. Between offensive tackle and defensive end, assuming they have a similar grade on two guys who are available at 13, do you place a precedent on one position over the other?
For this team, yes, offensive tackle, I do. Because just watching the Jets last season, I feel good about the defense. I don't feel good about the offense. And, I think no matter who you put a quarterback, it's not a be-all, fix-all solution. You need a lot of help on offense to help make that machine go. And I think adding offensive tackle help will help do that. Where on defense, I feel pretty good about who we're going to line up tomorrow and go play. Now, would I love to add a Nolan Smith to that group? Absolutely. That'd be a ton of fun. Add his 4.3 speed. out there, or a Lucas Van Ness, a guy that can grow. And I feel like with Lucas Van Ness, you're buying low, and he has a chance to be a big-time player in this league. So I could understand if that's the direction they went, but if I have to choose between offensive line, defensive line, for this team, I'm going with the offense.
Okay, there you go. The Dane Brugler stamp of approval on offensive tackle at 13. I'm guessing that's also where you think this is heading, right? Like, I think you fall in that camp.
And it seems like when something seems so obvious that there's no chance it's going to happen. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, did any of that – do you disagree with any of the, you know, the reasoning that we talked out?
Absolutely not. I think if you're a Jets fan and you're paying attention to the tea leaves of the team, it seems like as unsexy as it sounds to talk about offensive linemen every year, you know it's something that the Jets want to do. Take a look at the Eagles in the Super Bowl. Take a look at the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. They invested in the offensive line. You know Joe Douglas comes from the Philadelphia Eagles camp and with Howie Roseman. He is a former offensive lineman himself. So I think that if the Jets can set themselves up well at the tackle position, not only for the future, but also knowing what happened last year where not only did Mekhi Becton and Dwayne Brown get hurt, so did George Fant, so did Max Mitchell. Like, there were a lot of tackles and a lot of offensive line shuffling that created problems where the Jets' final game in Miami in week 18 was a makeshift offensive line. And I think that you're going to want to avoid that at all costs, especially because it seems top of mind. And I think it's interesting, though, what we haven't discussed is the trade back. Because if there is a scenario where potentially, you know, let's say Hendon Hooker is on the board or one of the quarterbacks is there at 13, someone wants to trade up to get him, how far back would you be willing to go to obtain more draft capital? Because you don't have a third-round pick anymore. You might not have all your picks on day two or day three, depending on what happens between now and the draft, and on draft night. So where do you is too far to move back that almost like screws yourself over in drafting one of these top tackles?
I think the question needs to become, are we okay with not drafting a tackle then if we're going to trade back? I think if we really want a tackle, that's priority number one. Unless you're moving back two spots, three spots, you take the tackle. If you're okay not getting your tackle, and you know, if you feel good about the second round tackles or, you know, whatever, you know, you've got those second round picks to play with, you can go get an Anton Harrison, you know, go get Matthew Bergeron to help your tackle depth. If you're okay with that, then yeah, trade back, add more draft capital, add more players. I'm almost always in favor of that strategy. So, but you know, it would be interesting to see if their phone rings. Is there anybody looking to move up to get a Bijan Robinson, trading up to get one of these quarterbacks? So, I think that they'll be open to trading back if the opportunity arises.
Okay. It's almost draft week. It's going to be fantastic. It's Christmas in April for Dane Brugler. As always, he gets two Christmases. This guy's selfish. Anyway, that's all we have for this episode. Next week, we're going full 7-round mock draft. Dane, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Ethan.